Johnny
on Hungry for Sport, John Rell for Supergroups. Kubota Excavator Finance deals on now.
The best advice Jeff has ever given that. Get on to Johnny Rell.
Now, Jeff is on the new... Is he a new board member or he's got some new role at Seven West, which, of course, governs all of Channel 7, and he's been asked about conflict of interest with racing because he doesn't think there should be checkbook journalism. He doesn't think there should be corporate bookmakers in sport. And as Matt Stewart has said today, well, it's hard. You're on a board... And Channel 7 are going to broadcast the racing, and they're going to have a lot of corporate bookmakers. So it's going to be interesting to see how Jeff handles that. Now, Jeff's the kind of bloke who would say, who just insults you. But, Kevin, I'd say, with all due respect, Kevin, you've spoken a lot of rot today about the rookie list.
No, I haven't.
Well, if we're going to have the parameters for the rookie list, then it's going to be you can have younger blokes on there or older blokes on there. Mm-hmm. You've got to follow the rules. Now, what Essendon chose to do
change the rules.
Okay, so you think you should change the rules. You're not saying that McKernan should just be allowed to play...
Not now. He can't do it this year, but
That's what you seem to be saying.
No, well, I mean, no. They've got to change the rules because we can't have it that... To me, if you're on a list, one of those lists at a football club, you should be able to have the opportunity of playing for that club. And we see it many times when we've got the last one with Sinclair, of course, and also Snyder. And there were some examples given. But I think that we're changing lots of things in football. Look, we're all getting our reserve sides back after we decided, no, we didn't want reserves football anymore. You know, people want to go back and play reserve games at, you know, the Western Oval and Witten Oval and also at Punt Road. And so everyone wants to, you know, turn back the clock, as we said once before, you know, back to the future. So... There was a time when you had guys on your list, you had about 52 players on the list. And if you were good enough, you got a game. In fact, if you were good enough playing in the under-19s, I remember one year when I was playing the under-19s, it wasn't me, but they brought up two kids straight from the under-19s and put them straight into the senior side.
I reckon right at the moment we've got players like Schneider who are being put on that list. And then the club might complain, oh, we can't believe that Schneider's not available. I don't see the downside in having a list of 45 and all of those blokes can play. Because what we've seen with the rookies, haven't we, is that, look, not blokes like Schneider, but we've seen 18 and 19-year-old rookies who've just come out of the box and been able to play great football.
Miles couldn't get a game for Tigers because he was a rookie early.
Again, though, he had been at GWS. They chose to put him on that rookie list. So, look, what I would say is just have your list of 45. I mean, the salary cap might go up a little bit, but we know that everyone on the list is capable of playing football. Miles, he might have been 7 or 8 weeks where they wanted to play him last year and weren't able to. So let's just expand the list to 45. Clubs don't have to make difficult decisions on Schneider and McKernan and all those kind of guys. I tell you about McKernan. Who aren't they hyping him? Essendon think he's the new Steph Martin. He has dominated in the VFL in the last couple of weeks. He was pretty handy 4 or 5 weeks ago when he did play that one game.
He's been elevated now, hasn't he?
He has, yeah. Yep. Well, I think he will be elevated today if he hasn't been. The decision is after the bye. So Essendon thinks he can come back in and really compete hard against Hale and, McAvoy can't get a game, Hale and Segler. So, I reckon you're right. Change the list, change the rule, 45, no problems. Mm. Just let's not have clubs complaining about the situation right now because they know the rules as they are. Let's tinker with them.
Well, it'd be something I think would be very, very good for the game and very good for the player and cause less heartburn for clubs because you put these players on because obviously at that stage you don't see them as being on your main list. So they could be a developing player or there's someone who's had injuries or setbacks or, you know, there's something about him that you're willing to take a risk with. And then all of a sudden he clicks and he should be in your best side.
Yeah.
You should have that opportunity to play him. Alan Richardson spoke to the media this morning about his interpretation of the AFL rookie list.
Yeah, my understanding of the rookie list was it was brought in to make sure the teams become competitive when there was a lot of injuries. And so if a team was decimated, you could bring in these guys. Financially, there was not the commitment for the footy club that a primary list player would take. So that all makes sense, but I just don't understand, and I don't think there's the need now to have these guys where they actually can't play. Just continue to have those players as rookies, if you want to keep that term. But I don't see there's a negative in having those guys come in and play on your list. I just can't see any negatives. So that is what we'd be pushing for.
I understand that, and I think he should push for that, Alan Richardson.
The AFL already made a common sense decision. I reckon on the same day, 3 St Kilda blokes got put on the long-term injury list, 3 guys got elevated. And then Sinclair, was actually linked to one of those blokes. So one of those blokes was ready to return, one wasn't, and Sinclair was supposed to go back down. And they said, hey, no, hang on. I mean, if three go up, three go down, we don't care who goes back onto the rookie list, as someone does, as long as someone else does. So they've already shown an ability to have some common sense, the AFL. So, look, I'm sure that they'll think of other...
Now, you came in today and you said something to me about there's a hovercraft outside. Well, where's the hovercraft here at SEN?
Well, Joey, the intrepid the chosen one. Thirds playing producer, he was showing me the hoverboard. Now, it's Lexus has made a hoverboard. It's literally makes... It actually works. Now, it's all about strong magnets, and you can ride on it, and you can just hover across the ground. And it got me thinking, when you saw Marty McFly with his hoverboard in Back to the Future, you thought, I'll never see one of them. In my lifetime, I will never see one of those in real life. And then, because I got a weird way of thinking, I thought, what have you seen that you never thought you would see? So I thought, I never thought I would see Jordan Spieth, a 21-year-old, winning majors, two of them, in fact, by that age. You always got told, well, you've got to be 30. You've got to win a few and lose. You've got to lose a few before you win it through. I never thought I would see the New York Times telling Greg Norman to speak more about his career, because Greg loves a story about himself. A bit like Dean Jones. Oh, tell us about Madras again. Tell us about that 210. I never thought I'd see it. I never thought I would see a situation where about an eighth, that's the stat, an eighth of players would kick a goal. And what do they do next, Kevin?
Run off the ground.
They run off the ground.
Do you know...
So what are the things that you never thought, you know, the Jetson-esque moments, the things in sport. You thought, never in my life will I ever see that. And yet we see it. Because of the modern ways of sport.
Things you thought you would never see in sport. Just on that, with running off the ground, when I was broadcasting a couple of weeks ago that Melbourne St Kilda game, Melbourne kicked the opening goal, got it out of the centre and got it down the forward line, and Jesse Hogan came out and took a very low chest mark from memory, went back and kicked the goal, and ran straight off the ground. And I looked at the time clock, 65 seconds.
Yes.
65 seconds he was on the ground, kicked a goal, and we felt the need that Jesse had to run off the ground after 65 seconds.
About 6 weeks.
Thought I'd never see that.
No, I agree. About 6 weeks back, every time I looked at a player who had kicked a goal, they would pan to him next, and what we were doing, sitting on the bench, getting some instructions. I thought to myself, this is bizarre. So I went back and looked at the stats. I think it was about 12 or 13% of players. It wasn't as much as I thought, but even that's too much.
Badge of honour to run off the ground. So you kick the goal,
yep,
and then you run off the ground. Yes. And camera keeps on
you. Yes, with the Matty White high steps or the Stephen Morris high steps. I spoke to Dennis Pagan about it a couple of weeks back, and he actually thinks that we're setting these players up to fail. That if you tell a bloke he's going to be tired in 4 minutes and he has to run to the bench, it's basically making them think, you're right, absolutely. What is it, Todd Sampson? He did that retrain your brain. And so where he, I think you've spoken to...
DC Dave Colbert,
where if you're chasing someone on a bike in a TV simulation, you go a lot faster than if you're just going by yourself. So you can retrain your brain. So if you train your brain to think I'm tired after 4 minutes, there might just be something to that, Kevin.
Yes, you were saying they had a plank, and I think they laid the plank on the ground, and you had to walk across the plank maybe 10, 15 feet or 20 feet or something like that. No problems. Then they put the same plank up in the air.
You go.
20 or 30 feet in the air, and... Yep. You're not so confident you can actually walk across the plank. So you've got to retrain the mind. Let's take some early calls. 9429 1116, along with the buzz. It's always your forum to fire up what's on your mind in sport. Greg's in Werribee. G'day, Greg.
Hey, Kev, how you going?
Greg, we're going great. Thanks for joining us.
Buzz, I'm always careful. We look back on the past through rose-coloured glasses. I can still recall clubs spending $1.20 when they earn a dollar. As a matter of fact, Collingwood nearly bankrupt in an afternoon many, many years ago in the 80s. I think there's pluses in the past and there's pluses and minuses in the future to be gained. I think we're probably far too quick to make changes within our game and adjust it instead of letting the game gradually grow.
Well, I think even if you learn from the past, but you still... You know, accept some really good things and the bad things from it. As Dennis Pagan said, you know what? We used to train a couple of hours a week really, really hard, and the players would flush a bit of grog out, and they always ran over opponents. You know, we'd be three goals down, 10 minutes in the last quarter, and we ran over people. So I think that what Port Adelaide has done, just trained harder and harder and harder, I think there's a lot of smarts in that. I mean, if you're only on the track for, I don't know, an hour and a half during the week, how do you get better? How do you get better at your goal kicking? How do you get better with your skills? How do you... You know, turn yourself into a mongrel competitor when you're only on... How do you get better? I just don't understand that.
What about last night? I've had a number of SMSs. I didn't see the football show last night, but Daniel Kerr was on the football show. I saw a little bit of him this morning. I was watching one of the early Channel 9 news services, and they showed Daniel Kerr chatting, being interviewed by Gary Lyon. What did you make of that Daniel Kerr interview?
You watched it? I did. Look, Gary did a good job. He asked him all the right questions. I reckon his contrition level was about 1.5 out of 10. Maybe it's going to take a while for him, but he's always got that perennial smirk on his face. And as much as he was trying to say, look, the drugs are terrible and you've got to stay away from them, he just couldn't help just throwing in a story about Vegas. And I tell you what, I got lost for a couple of days and it was so fun.
Got lost in Vegas?
Yes, but then again, I'm very serious. So, look, I haven't got a problem with Channel 9 getting him on. It was interesting.
Oh, it's a very good get.
And, yeah, no doubt,
I mean,
he
certainly has a story. I mean, just recently, police were investigating the fact that a house was going to be burnt down.
Yep.
And we know that he's made some comments recently that he's been on ice and things of that nature. Mm-hmm. So very interesting and a great, great player. So a very interesting personality to have on the show.
Yeah, my only worry, if you were a young footballer who'd watched that show, you'd go, geez, you can have all this fun, you can win premierships, you can take ice, and geez, I'm still here I am getting jobs in Indigenous welfare. That was my only worry, that he didn't seem contrite, and it didn't seem you see Ben Cousins. I mean, Ben Cousins is a broken man. Brent Guerra told a story that just shocked you and disgusted you in some ways. Whereas if you looked at Daniel Kerr, you'd say, oh, mate, he hasn't got a care in the world. He's done all these terrible things. He's taken drugs. He's, you know, done whatever he has, and he's still going okay. That was my worry with it.
So it's just his body language, because I've heard some of the audio of Daniel Kerr saying, you know, don't get involved in drugs. Could be just it's a big problem in high schools as much as it is in AFL, and you've got to be able to say no and, you know, do the right thing by your family and things like that. So obviously he said some of the right things in the interview, but you're just concerned about the way that he presented himself.
Yeah. I reckon half of it was lies. You know, he said, oh, look, West Coast didn't have a drug problem. No, it wasn't too bad. Everything was fine. And, yeah, like, I did tell the truth a few times to John Worsfold, and I was honest about that. But I think if he laid himself bare, and that might be a couple of years down the track, I think he will eventually tell a really different story to what he did yesterday. But, again, you know, the first step is to have some the first step is to admit you have something of a problem, or to get it out there. And he's admitted that he has taken methamphetamines, which is a big step. I think he's still got a long way to go in his recovery.
Okay, if you saw that interview last night, you may like to give your thoughts on it as well. We'll take a quick break, and we'll come back, and we'll take your calls along with the bus. And of course, always do yourself a favour and check out Unifor Food Service website. Of course, it all starts at Unifor Fresh. Stay healthy at work with their range of fresh fruit, milk, juices and breads. Then they've got their range of coffee, tea, biscuits, chips, nuts and all sorts of pantry supplies. And finally, don't forget Unifor Cellars for fantastic wines and beers and beverages to suit any occasion. Call Unifor now on 9371-3555. And remember the website, Unifor, unifor.com.au, delivered to your door. Don't forget, from the cafe to the top of the Rialto. Alex joins us in Narre Warren, wants to talk about the interview last night with Daniel Kerr. G'day, Alex.
Hi, guys. How are you going?
Good, thank you. What did you make of it?
I didn't like it, actually. I found that he contradicted himself a lot with what he said, and how he said about he is not Gary Outline asked him if he would stop drinking alcohol, and he said no, but he's working with Indigenous people. I find that really interesting that he won't stop drinking alcohol when Indigenous communities suffer so much from alcoholism. Mm.
Well, it's interesting too, because Alex just told by the buzz that, and I did hear it also, that he said alcohol was, you know, the big problem when he drank alcohol is when he sort of went off the rails. So I can understand why you found that a bit odd.
And Alex, he'd say things like, oh, yeah, no, I haven't really got a drug problem. You know, I have a few drinks and I have a few too many. And then I do things, as in, like, I do things with clearly, you know, horrific drug abuse. And he just sort of flippantly referred to it as that, rather than saying, and then I just go off the horrible path and I just recommend no one else ever does it. It wasn't that. It was sort of like, oh, yeah, I just have a three-day bender and then I just roll around again. It was perplexing, Alex, wasn't it?
And it also, I used to work with women that had drug and alcohol problems, and with him saying that alcohol was his big issue, you wouldn't recognise that the amount of drugs that he took, he wouldn't think that that would be a problem. It's just because he identifies that alcohol is his big issue, not drugs.
It does stun me too how so many of those West Coast players were clearly on illicit drugs so often during the season and the off season, and yet none of them were thrown out of the league. You know, it just shows how almost impossible it was to get three strikes. I think Benny admits in his book that he did get a strike once. He's a bit worried about it. Nothing happened. You know, it wasn't a game day test. I'll go back and have a look at his. But it was something.
It couldn't have been game day. He would have been caught and rubbed out.
Yeah, but it was something where he thought, look, I'm in real strife here, and nothing happened. And it almost just ticked off all of the behaviour that he had. I mean, when it was 10 or 12 players, and we all know that they're doing it repeatedly, Ben talks in his book about, oh, yeah, I really saved up, and they just went on this occasional binge, and no one could find... The people who know within West Coast and Perth say that he was repeatedly on it all of the time. And yet, you know, if you're only getting tested twice a year, I suppose it's hard to get three positive tests.
But Daniel Kerr, you're saying last night, made the comment that there was no drug culture at West Coast.
No, he says, no, nothing to worry about. Nothing. No, there might have been a few people. And look, we're a bit honest with John Worsfold, but no, not really. Nothing to see, move along.
Alex, thanks for your thoughts. Berkey's in Riverside. We're also asking you things you thought you would never see in sport, because we're told there's a hoverboard that's been brought out by Lexus. And,
yes.
Works. Someone's going to, ride this hoverboard, at the footy, are they? Across the grass or something?
No, it's not a hovercraft. It's a hoverboard.
Hoverboard?
So you just roll along in space like Marty McFly. Look, Marty, Back to the Future 2, I've just got it up on YouTube. He's a good-looking fella too.
Berkey's in Riverside. G'day, Berkey.
G'day, Buzz. G'day, Mr. Bartlett. Carlton will have one of those before in the next few weeks. You still have a hoverboard. Save watching the game, I suppose. But anyway, the thing I never thought I'd see, lads, was that there's a commercial on Fox Footy at the moment for the Richmond Footy Club.
Oh, yes.
Francis.
Yes.
Uncle Francis kicking a ball, but it's one there of one Kevin Barlin, and I don't know what he's doing there, but he's holding the ball in one hand, and he makes this gesture that he looks like he's trying to handball.
I couldn't agree more. He looks so smug and supercilious and pompous too. You think you're Marlon Brando in that ad, don't you? You get the ball and you just pump those muscles up a bit. Did you do a few beach weights, Kevin? Just pump out 20 push-ups and then you fire it off like it's not the first time you've ever handballed.
I haven't seen the ad, but I'll have to check that out because
it's on high rotation.
I can't remember handballing in any ad that I did for the Richmond Football Club. I can't remember that, but they do so many things these days. They Photoshop so many things.
Well, you know, body doubles, Kevin. You know, Game of Thrones and the body double there, you know, with that famous scene. Maybe it was a body double.
Berkey, I appreciate the fact that you've brought that to my attention, and I will now have a look at that and see what they've actually done on the computer that obviously has embarrassed me, Berkey. So I'll check it out.
Supercilious, pompous.
Heather was watching the Channel 9 footy show last night, and Daniel Kerr. G'day, Heather.
Sorry, I wasn't actually watching it, but I've listened to the clip from it, and I can't help but compare the similarities to the way he spoke in the documentary when Ben Cousins was on TV, the flippant way in which they carried themselves. It was like, it was just, just something, that we did and all this sort of thing. And they don't win any friends by that. It's just frightening.
Well, he sounded like he was in denial. He said, I'm not going to give up the booze, even though he admitted when he had a few drinks, that led to 100 drinks, which led to ice. It's a bit like Brent Guerra saying, I'm not going to give up gambling. I am going to give up gambling, but I'm going to spend half my time in the TAB. I'm not going to gamble, Kevin. I'll just be in the TAB. I mean, what is it? Gateway drugs or whatever it might be. You know, gateway behaviour that leads to something more. He's got to give up the drink if he's really serious about redeeming himself.
Okay, give us your thoughts if you saw that Channel 9 show last night with Daniel Kerr. Sports Central is coming up, then we're coming back with a buzz, and he's got his famous three stings as well. 9429 1116 is our famous talkback number. If you want to send through an SMS, 0433 98 1116. If you want to tweet, at Kevin Bartlett. We've got a double pass giveaway to one of our best callers for the Hawthorn-Essendon game on Saturday. Clash between two fierce rivals have a habit of really producing some great moments. So don't miss your chance to witness in the next memorable moment this Saturday from 1:40 p.m. at the G. You can get your seats from afl.com.au/tickets. And we've got a double pass for you to go along and see that cracking game.
I see Reece Stanley's out too. I know we've got some calls lined up.
Reece Stanley.
But that is a huge loss for Geelong. I mean, he looked like, I don't know, he looked like anything.
Yes,
well, and then he got injured. And now Doc Larkin says that's the list.
Because they got killed by Max Gorn.
And Jake Spencer.
Absolutely towed them up.
Yes, the double teaming stars of the Melbourne Football Club. Look, Doc Larkin says that's a list, Frank. Look, I know that there are different, you can do a knee badly, you can only just do it. But that's the one that a lot of players have had who have really struggled to get back from that. Mitch Clark's at it himself. So, look, we all hope that he goes well and his recovery is fantastic. But that's a very serious injury.
Gary Ablett play this week against Carlton?
I think
100th
so.
Game for the Gold Coast Suns.
Yeah, amazing. Yes, I think he will. I know he's got a little bursasack problem. He just needs to front up. He looked really exciting at training. They had some footage there and he looked like he was ready to go. He was bouncing around and he looked really fit. And look, he probably won't run out the entire game. But I just think it's massive to have your captain there. And the boys want him there, and I think he'll play.
Who wins the wooden spoon this year, you think?
Oh, I think Brisbane do. I mean, Brisbane have got a lot of injuries, a lot of key forward availability issues. I think the Gold Coast can come hard. Yeah, and they're not going to win, you know, win eight games, but I think they could win four or five pretty easily. And I think Carlton can win four or five pretty easily. So I think as long as you're...
Brisbane look like they're really struggling, don't they?
They do.
Really struggling.
I think if you've got a top three pick, you're going to be okay, but you wouldn't want to finish fourth or fifth last from Carlton's position. Or would you? I mean, would you prefer to just bounce up? You might get pick five, which is clearly an inferior player to pick three.
Well, it depends how good you are at picking.
No, well, there's only three really good players by all accounts. Francis and Shacky, who might be the pick one.
Shacky, they reckon, is going to go number one. Yeah. The son of Lawrence Shacky, I think it was, played at Brisbane, who died very, very young.
Yep. I think he played 29 games. I think they have a website.
And I think he was a star for Sturt too. I think he kicked a lot of goals playing for Sturt, but his son, I'm told, is going to go number one.
Well, that's he roared into contention the last couple of weeks. Wiedering's the other player, but my point is there's three really good players, and then there's a couple of academy kids, and then it goes downhill. So as much as Carlton would want to surge hard and just finish off the year well, if you've got a top three pick, you'd be pretty happy. If you're outside that, you'd be a little bit nervous.
Jared joins us in Geelong, wants to talk about Daniel Kerr. G'day, Jared.
G'day. Can I have two quick points there, Kevin?
Yes, you can.
One is that if you wanted to see his personality and what he was like, and that was all good and well, but if it was to sell us some sort of message or anything like that, he was pretty unconvincing about... I know he just likes to have a bit of a smirk and all that, but the way he fogged off everything and reckons, oh, I'm looking forward to next year's reunion, more or less insinuating he was possibly going to go on another bender or whatever he was going to do, right?
He said, it's going to be fun. I mean, you know, oh, my God.
Not in Vegas, is it, the reunion?
Well, he laughed about that story, didn't he, Jared? And it was a time where Chad Fletcher was dead, wasn't he, on a hospital table?
Well, he flatlined. That's what we heard, he flatlined.
He did, yes.
I can remember the time they asked the Eagles president, you may recall this also, Jared, about him. Was it Barnabar? Was it? Might have been, something like that.
Mark Barnabar, was it? Yeah.
Something like that. And I apologise not knowing his name, but I think it's something like Barnabar. But he said, oh, I don't know. Well, I think he had a virus or something. I haven't really asked. Or, you know, like it was, everyone's saying, he's in hospital.
One player loses 2 days. One player nearly dies. And they're snorting Australian maps of cocaine. But no, I haven't really thought to ask you because we won the flag and we don't give us stuff. What else happens?
So no message he gave last night, Jared, you don't think? But you do like his personality.
Yeah, and look, just one other quick thing, if we could. Want to promote July the 18th, St Albans Football Club, Geelong Hall of Fame. The club's over 110 years old. Wait, can you pass the message on to Gazelle? He was our full back there for a couple of years, right?
Oh, tell us a bit about Gazelle's footballing history.
And he wasn't a bad player. Can I leave my phone number there to try and get a hold of him? We wouldn't mind trying to get him there on the night, the old Gazelle.
I'll put you back to Joey Pignataro, the chosen one, the world's greatest producer, and he'll take down your number.
Gazelle will MC it for free, I would think.
We will pass that on to Gazelle for you. Little Joey's not happy. Started again with St Bernard's. Mm. 52 possessions last week.
Yes.
Joey and St Bernard still won't elevate him into the seconds, let alone into the first.
Have you had Anthony Rock on the show?
No.
Maybe it's time.
No.
To put it to him, face to face.
Anthony Rock's got to have a good hard look at himself, I would think. He's the Eddie Betts of the competition, they reckon. Eddie Betts of the competition. Willie's on the road. G'day, Willie.
Morning, Kevin and John. Just talking on the Daniel Kerr issue, it's interesting that there's a concern over his flippancy, I guess.
Yes.
Of his treatment of the drugs, which is an obvious issue for the society as a whole. And yet, yesterday when Brent Guerra was on, you know, gambling is another big issue that society needs to consider. And yet, sort of within the hour, again, there's a lot of advertisements for gambling and that kind of thing. And I'm just wondering when there will be a serious debate on whether the advertising of gambling should be so prevalent when it is becoming such an issue for, it's not only footballers, it's many people within the wider community.
It's a great call. The entire industry is addicted in some way to gambling, to the dollars. We were talking about it yesterday. I opened up our paper.
Sponsorships, television, newspapers. Yeah.
So we've all become, you know, accepting of it in some ways, but we all realise that it's damaging as well. So
it's legal, Willie. It's legal. You know, taking drugs is not legal, but gambling is legal. But it's a fair point, Willie. The AFL was concerned about it over 12 months ago. You might recall there was a lot of advertising taking place during games and things of that nature.
Well, Mike Fitzpatrick, I think, stepped in, and I don't believe it's during games. But,
not
but,
now.
No, but it's not anymore, but I think you know where to find it. So again, we're all part of the problem. I said yesterday, do we need a symposium or a forum? Look, there's always going to be some level of advertising. Have we got enough awareness about what happens when it goes wrong? The counsellors and the advice lines. I think that's a really serious conversation we need to have, and it's a great call from Willie.
Yes, it's all about education. But I heard David Swartz talking about it. It's so different now because you can have anonymity by just being at home and open up your iPad, and you can go onto the betting sites and you can bet. No one knows.
Yeah. What are you doing, dear? I'm just on Twitter. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden and a lot of people are talking about live betting, whether that will come in, whether there's even more of that.
Yep.
You know, your team's six goals down, right? I'll start chasing. And
A lot of people say also, Willie, that if you don't have... outlets, well, then it goes underground. There was always football betting when I was a kid growing up. You know, my dad would come home from the pub and say, you know, he's had a few dollars on the Bulldogs or something like that. But I mean, right now, I mean, betting is huge, isn't it? All around, well, certainly in this country, absolutely huge. And the sponsorship dollar, most of it is coming from betting agencies as well. So that creates a problem for outlets as well.
And they're all giving out free bets and different $2 lines.
Yeah, but it's up to the game. It's up to organisations to at least keep track of how it's all going and have checks and balances. So it's a fair point that you make. Joey's in Sunshine. G'day, Joey.
Hey, mate. How are you going?
Good, Joe.
Just a couple of comments. I think the buzz we were talking, you was mentioned that Port Adelaide has trained harder and taken the theory of training harder on board. But I've been looking at the way they've been playing this year. Maybe they've trained too hard.
It's a valid question, and Darren Burgess has been asked that, and he says, no, I haven't cooked the players. I think Ken Hinckley thinks that it's very much about strategy, and it's very much about the players going into their shells. It'd be really interesting to see their GPSs, because I think they've still got the capacity to train, to run hard. They just don't seem to be doing it. But
every year we hear, Joe and Buzz, that you hear the players talking, and say, pre-season training this year, you know, it's gone up another...
40%. Fremantle, 40%. That's what Rossi Lyons says.
Okay, 40%. Mm-hmm. I was going to say 15%.
No, we did 40% more running, 40% more 40%. Sessions.
So each year, I reckon, you hear them say, oh, this is the hardest pre-season I've ever done. So you've got to get to a point where the time and effort that you put into something, the gain that you actually get out of it is minimal for the amount of time and effort that you actually put in. So you might train for an extra 2 hours a day, per day, per week, so you might train an extra 14 hours, but the amount of benefit it is to you is so minuscule that it's hard to even contemplate.
Well,
so,
you have to
be... But there must be wear and tear on the body in trying to get to that minuscule improvement.
You've got to be very fit, Kevin, because you've got to be able to run to the bench really quickly and really get those arms up and start pumping them. But you make a good point. I suppose they talk about 1%ers. Geelong's done a lot of volume rather than short stuff. So I suppose they keep changing the way they train as much as they put volume in. But you make a good point.
What they used to say, Ron Barassi, it's not quantity of training, it's quality of training. We'll take a break. We'll come back. Got Ralphie Stings plus more of your calls. Pete, his first cab off the rank.
On 11.16 SEN, Hungry for Sport with Kevin Bartlett for Penfold Holden, celebrating 50 years of the Penfold family.
Yes, and there's the three stings, of course, coming up. The buzz, sometimes he attacks the weak and those who can't defend himself, but occasionally he'll come up with a big name.
I don't want to give oxygen to those who would write stories about women's sport that are basically there for clickbait and who I don't necessarily think really believe.
What's clickbait?
It's basically you throw up something. You think the sky's blue out there? I'm going to say that it's purple. And everyone goes, oh my God, this is an amazing story. And so you put readers in touch with your story. So I think there are people...
Clickbait. Click what? You're clicking a button?
Yeah,
something
you
like
click
that.
On that. You know, guess who has done this on Twitter. It's clickbait.
Okay.
So there were some out there that have been attacking women's sport, and I don't want to give them any notoriety because that's exactly what they want. All I will say that having done...
That was Rita you're talking about.
All I will say is that some of the most amazing moments that I've ever seen in Commonwealth Games and Olympic history have been women. Sally Pearson winning gold. Australian Diamonds bouncing back after the absolute desolation of Delhi. Cathy Freeman Women's hockey side, I saw them in Glasgow. They're in the final, 30 seconds to go. They're a goal down. They somehow won on penalties. Anna Mears, beating Victoria Pendleton after so much drama and the animosity. So all I would say is that if people think that, look, women's sport doesn't matter, I mean, they're either...
Well, I think Rita said that she doesn't like watching women's sport it's inferior to men's sport.
They're either just throwing up opinions that they don't believe, or they're a horrible, horrible judge of sport. And it makes it hard for you to read their stories in the future when you think, well, when they're so far off base, how do you read that story and see them have any credibility?
Okay, there's a sting for Rita.
My second sting is to Graham Swan. Now, he's come out and attacked Australia's number three. You can't go and do that. Well, you can do it, but you need to first reference it with the preface. This bloke smacked me around in the Ashes and probably caused me to retire early. Now, if he come out and said that, look, I'll tell you what, I just got smashed by Smith, but I still think he might be vulnerable to the swinging ball. Well, that gives you some credibility. Whereas if you just come out and say, I'll tell you what, this bloke, mate, we're going to knock him over, Jimmy Anderson, he's going to be his bunny, that doesn't give you a lot of credibility.
So Graham Swan?
Graham Swan.
Big sting.
Big sting. And my third sting is to the New Zealand cricketers. Now, we believe 17 out of 20 of them don't want to play a day-night test match in, I think it's November, against the Aussies. Are they happy to play at the Basin Reserve with 12 spectators? Are they happy to just be stuck in the dark ages? Because I think that pink ball looks pretty good. I think there's going to be a few little issues. There's going to be teething problems.
It'll be an historic test, wouldn't it?
It will be a historic test. A day-night test will have people just turning up in droves. It will be incredible. And yet they say, oh, no, I'm not sure about that. Look, I think if Chris Rogers had a legitimate beef with it, he can't see the pill. I reckon that's pretty fair.
Might be a bit like when the Packer days, when they decided to play at night, you know, one day cricket. And yep. I can remember the West Indies came out in that, you know, that pinky sort of maroon sort of uniform and all that sort of stuff. So, I mean, it's historic at that stage. A lot of people said, oh, this will never last and, you know, it's hopeless and all that sort of stuff.
So my point is the Test cricket, look,
I'd like to play in that very first day-night Test match. I think it'll be fantastic.
Absolutely incredible. It'll grow the amount of money that's available. I mean, the best day, the best Test match of the year that we see is that West Australian Test match. You sit back, you watch the last session. What does it start? 6:30. It's absolutely perfect. So for those blokes to say, oh, well, we'd rather play in front of, you know, a couple of sheep and a goat and a couple of scorers, that's just backward thinking.
Well, don't forget Gold Coast also, they play their 100th game this week, so it's good. But you're suggesting that Gary Ablett will play in that game. So
I hope he will.
That'll be good. Have we lost sight of the fact that Gary Ablett last year nearly won the Brownlow medal by playing nearly half a season? I know everyone's saying, well, you know, Nat Fyfe, we've never seen a season like Nat Fyfe, but I reckon last year that, you know, Gary Ablett, I mean, he made All-Australian last year and he missed, you know, I don't know what it was, the last six or seven games or so.
I think he played 16 in the 16th.
And he would have won. He would have won the Brownlow medal, we believe, if he hadn't been fit enough the way he was going. So do we forget pretty quickly, don't we? You know, time, you know, all of a sudden we become very blurry in our minds that, you know, Fife's having a great season, but gee, Ablett's had some great seasons, hasn't he?
I think my colleague John Anderson looked up the stats. I reckon Fife, he thought, had been tagged once, and I think he felt like Gary Ablett had been tagged in every one of those games last year. So you're right. When you run around...
Except for a couple of years ago when he played against Collingwood, he had 53.
No, I agree. And they didn't think they were very good 53 either. But he'd look back and he said all of those games last year he was tagged, and yet he still did what he did. You're right, we can forget pretty quickly.
I think that Collingwood's got to tag Fyfe tonight if they're going to have any chance of winning. They can't allow someone just to go head-to-head with him.
Well, I've got Crisp there, and Crisp sometimes...
So he's got the job, you reckon?
Oh, I'd be stunned if they didn't. And I know at times that that Fyfe's going to roll forward and he might get a mismatch there, but I look at Crisp as someone who can be accountable to him, who can still win 20 possessions, who can use the ball well on the wide-open spaces of domain. You've got to be accountable. It doesn't mean that you totally throw away your own game. But if they just let Fyfe have 40 and kick four, well, I think we know what the result's going to be.
Buzz, you've been magnificent today, and we'll catch you next week.
Time has flown.
Okay. Alex from Narre Warren, give us a call back. You're off to the footy Saturday afternoon for Hawthorn and the Bombers. Give us a call back. You're off to see what's going to be another great game between these two famous clubs.